Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center. In the studio with me is Dan McKay representing the political right.
Hi, Natalie.
Representative Dan McKay, I should say. And on the left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good day, everybody.
It is wonderful to be in the studio, and we've got a lot of current event political news to talk about. But the first thing we're going to talk about is kind of a downer, guys. Let's talk about Senator Al Franken, Democrat from Minnesota, the latest to join the growing list of men accused of sexual harassment. We also had this week journalist Charlie Rose. This is tough stuff. And Jim, you said something off the air that really sticks with me, and that is that we got 30 years of this to catch up on. Just get ready. There's more coming.
Occasionally when society changes, it changes overnight. You know, things build up and build up and build up, and then something happens and everything is different from then on.
That's a tipping point. It's a way
exactly.
to think of it. Yeah.
And sometimes things you think are a tipping point. I mean, we've had this happen several times before vis-a-vis men and women and harassment, and it hasn't turned to a tipping point. But I suspect that we haven't even seen the beginning of the iceberg, that we're soon going to have reams every day of stories about men who have been at least boorish and sometimes sexual predators on women. There's 30 years of pent-up stories, 40 years, 50 years, and I suspect that this is actually going to change our society.
Dan?
I hope Jim's right.
Yeah.
You know, I would say that even in my daily life, you know, as I communicate with the opposite sex and those, I'm aware more so than I was probably in the past. And I'm hopeful that I think that that mindset changes a lot of people's thinking, that they're more aware, that they're more, I don't know, just more people, that we'd start treating people more like equals and that there's a good relationship type of thing that comes out of this as opposed to, boy, it just, to Jim's point, you know, if we're going to have 30 years of these revelations, this is going to be a painful next 6 months to a year.
Yeah. I think of this photograph of Al Franken with the woman. What is she, a Hollywood star or something? I don't really know her.
Yeah. Well, she's a TV reporter.
Okay.
And also former Playboy model.
Okay. Jim and Dan, I'm sure you saw the photograph, but it's this. You saw the photograph?
I saw the photograph.
Okay, I mean, it's not.
Al Franken.
For our listeners, it's just she's asleep. It looks like on a plane or something.
Yeah, she's wearing a military flak jacket.
Military vest, and he puts his hands over both breasts and just sort of takes a photograph of him like, ha, look what I can do. And it's just so offensive, right?
Yeah.
This is the objectification of women, and the I just think women are done with it.
It looks like a bad frat joke is really what it looks like. It's like a really poorly executed frat joke. Now, at the time, it was not Senator Al Franken. It was Saturday Night Live comedian Al Franken. So maybe that informs his frat behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's, you know, you also heard about, wasn't there a lady who came out and said that she posed with him in 2010 in a photo where he was at a some kind of community event. I think it was a fair. And, you know, he goosed her on the backside. And you know, that kind of complaint doesn't help him. You know, when you look at the totality
have,
of it. But he's been really apologetic, don't you think? Like, I look at Al Franken, and I compare him to Roy Moore. And Al Franken, and I hate to say this, but he's somewhat handled it the way I think it should be, which is, I'm sorry. I did some things I shouldn't have done.
Up.
I'm not going to do this ever again. I've learned. And that, to me, there's a contrition there. I don't know if he gets to stay in office. I think the voters will get to make a decision. I think there's some of that. But Al Franken seems to have some sincerity element as opposed to Roy Moore, which is just, it didn't happen. And if it did happen, I didn't mean it.
Yeah, Jim, I know we got to jump onto something else, but you want to say any last words?
I just think we need, as a society, and I don't know how this happens, we need to set new rules.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to know now, this is acceptable, this isn't acceptable. This is where it goes. I think our college campuses have been leaning that way the last two or three years with these campaigns about yes is yes and no is no, and helping people to communicate with each other. We need in the workplace, we need in dating, we need everywhere a whole new set of rules that everybody understands, because they're all getting lumped in together, and I don't think all of these things are the same. And somehow over the next little while, as these things come out, as this is all on fire, we have to figure out a way that we figure out what's acceptable and what isn't.
Yeah. Well, speaking on behalf of women, this type of behavior is completely unacceptable, and I don't think women are going to take it anymore. And you know what? Women are in a position now to stand up for themselves because they've entered the workforce. They can provide for themselves. They, you know, are making a lot of money and doing things that make it so that they can be more independent.
Yeah.
And so I think we've got a new future out there. Hey, I want to ask you one other thing before we go to break, and it concerns Roy Moore and whether you predict he will be seated or elected.
Jim?
I'm interested to get your read there. So this is the, you know, the race in Alabama that Jeff Sessions might be a write-in for his own seat.
I know just about everything except Alabama Republican politics. But I want to put
you
this
don't
back.
Understand Republican politics in Alabama.
I want to put it back.
Apparently,
on
there's a tribe there.
There, that's who. All of your terrible thoughts about the Republican Party in Utah may actually be true in Alabama.
Yeah, I just want to say, where is Utah? Where is the outrage? Mm-hmm. I mean, this should not be a quiet matter. Where are our institutions? You know, I'm disappointed. This is a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And they're acting like it's just, you know, well, it's another, you know, it's a believe her or believe whatever. Yeah. So this is a moral issue. Where's
well,
Mike
Jim,
Lee? Where's Orrin Hatch? Where's the rest of them?
Well, and Jim, to your point, you know, the people that are speaking out most positively for Roy Moore are, you know, Christians, right? It's become so faith-based. And it's stunning to me.
If you look at young people and Christianity, they're not going there anymore. They're not going to church. They're not getting involved. And a lot of it is because these weirdos have taken over Christianity. Mm-hmm. And when Christians don't stand up and point a finger and say
to
no.
To molestation, and pedophilia.
To Christians that are embracing that. It's hard to take in on your own group. That ought to happen.
Dan, what's your prediction here?
I think Roy Moore will be seated as a U.S. senator.
Wow, you really do?
Yeah, I really do.
See, I've just seen that that either through the write-in or through their not seating him. I mean, so this would be a shocking turn for the Senate, Republican base because they've come out. I mean, to their credit, Jim, they've come out strongly.
Yeah, I think it reflects the partisan nature of where America is right now. People have shown, and it started with Bill Clinton. I'm not gonna mince words. Mm-hmm. People have shown, and it started with Bill Clinton, that we're willing to deal with fallibilities in our elected leaders. And if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. And I'm not saying that we should propagate this. It is interesting, in my opinion, to have the left lecturing the right about morality. I think that is a very interesting problem for the left, and I don't think they see it yet because they're pushing everybody to think about a morality. And that talking point doesn't go well for the left. So, asking Christians to stand up and asking, take one position or another, I don't think that conversation goes well for the left when you carry it to the next question. Your question was, does Roy Moore take the Senate seat? I think he will. But it's just a reflection of how partisan our country is becoming.
The situation we're
which is sad.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined in the studio by Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we are going to talk about tax reform.
Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. We have said to our audience that we're going to talk about tax reform in this segment. And I want to cue this off, you guys, by asking our producer, Emily Means, to play the audio of our good Senator Orrin Hatch in committee talking with Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown from Ohio about the Republican tax bill. This is a pretty shocking video. Let's cue this up.
I come from the poor people, and I've been here working my whole stinking career for people who don't have a chance. And I really resent anybody saying that I'm just doing this for the rich. Give me a break. I think you guys overplay that all the time, and it gets old. And frankly, you ought to quit it.
Mr. Chairman, the public
wait a minute. I'm not through. Okay. I get kind of sick and tired of it. True, it's a nice political play.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
it's not true.
With all due respect, I get sick and tired of the richest people.
Regular
in the
order,
country,
Mr. Chairman.
Getting richer and richer.
Regular order.
We do a tax
regular order.
Middle class.
Wait a minute.
Regular order.
And over and over again.
Wait just
how many
a second.
Times do we do this before we learn this, Mr. Chairman?
Listen, I've honored you by allowing you to spout off here. And what you said was not right. That's all I'm saying. I come from the lower middle class originally. We didn't have anything. So don't spew that stuff on me. I get a little tired of that crap.
Go get him, Orrin.
Wow, like there was somebody who knew what was going on there and participating.
Stop it.
You know, if you were an intern or a Senate page and you got to hear that, that was a little bit of history going on for the state of Utah.
For our listeners' benefit, for those who don't hang around D.C. policy or D.C. committees, when you hear regular order called in the Senate, I'm pretty sure the last time that was called in a committee.
Regular order.
Yeah, the last time that was called is, that's a motion, calling for the chairman to gavel the person there. The last time that was called, I think, was abolitionism. Or maybe, the slavery debates in Lincoln's time. I'm telling you, it is never done. So the idea that somebody's calling for regular order in a Senate committee, that was awesome.
Well, so if you break this down, though, who's right? Okay, so Senator Hatch is saying, hey, I come from a really poor background. We didn't have anything. I don't know. That seemed like a little bit of a stretch to me. But the bigger point is, what does this tax bill do?
So I went and bought Senator Hatch's book because I wanted to read it again. It's been years. I read it back in college, and I'm going to read it again. But, Senator Hatch here is the chairman of the Finance Committee, and which is arguably one of the most powerful committees in the Senate. And now he has been handed a bill from the House, and his job is to clean it up. And he is holding hearings and trying to do this in a very public way to try and bring about consensus and drive some, some good policy
and help with midterm elections, which are right around the corner.
Right. And so I think Senator Hatch, though, in this position, is trying to have a policy debate. And now he's got this Senator Brown who is, wants to tee off and make this partisan statement where he's like, look, I thought this was about policy. Let's have a policy conversation. And I thought, I was really excited by Senator Hatch. I like when there's a little fire. A
policy debate?
It's why I like Jim so much.
Part of the policy is that Orrin Hatch has lost touch completely and absolutely with normal working class families. He takes so much cash from Big Pharma, and I just happen to have the number here, from Open Secrets. $592,312 just over the last 5 years. And you multiply it by these giant corporations. Orrin Hatch has no clue. And you look at his tax bill and you see it's one giant loophole for corporations and big corporations after another. To say that he's there for the little guy, Orrin, give me a break. You want to stick with, I think these tax cuts will be good for little people eventually. That's one thing. But to say that you're there for little people, there wasn't enough scorn for Orrin Hatch.
Yeah. From the political center and as someone who specializes in public policy and even public finance, the tough thing for me about this is that the Sherrod Brown, the Ohio senator, is basically right. I mean, you may like the way Orrin Hatch defended himself, Dan, but, the proposal gets rid of the estate tax and lowers the marginal rate on the highest, earners. I think it's a matter of record that this gives a lot of tax breaks to the rich. When I was in school, and I know many of you have heard this, but I had a professor who said, there's got to be food on the table so there's scraps on the floor. You guys heard this saying? And that's what this tax bill does in some sense. And I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm not saying the policy's wrong, but I am saying that the facts are pretty clear of what's going on here. Reaction, guys?
Can I just say, this is a tax break in desperate need of an economic situation. I mean, you got the GDP growing. Unemployment is maxed out. We're at 4%.
Super
you don't
low.
Get lower than
Full
that.
Employment, yeah.
Corporate profits never been looking better. The stock market is soaring. American corporations have almost $2 trillion in cash. And we're going with a stimulus tax cut?
This is interesting.
Whoever would imagine that?
I'm impressed that Jim is going here, Dan.
And what's going to happen?
Because I had a business leader pull me aside the other day, and he said, we don't need this. You know, because what's going to happen is the debt's going to swell.
Yeah.
And then what's going to happen, all of those tools for the Fed to use and for government, when we need it, and believe it or not, there's going to be a recession, we're not going to have those tools because we will have wasted them on a time when they're completely, absolutely not necessary. It is all political, not a bit economic. It's a catastrophic policy.
Jim DeBacchus teaches us economics,
okay,
Dan.
So let's make sure we don't get trapped into one little pigeonhole of economics, right?
Okay.
So we have an economy that is artificially, some would argue, propped up by artificially low interest rates. Mm-hmm. I mean, our borrowing rate is at its lowest that it's been in generations.
It's been there for a long time.
And it's been there for a long time. And as long as that rate is low, we incentivize borrowing, we incentivize, economic activity.
Penalize the saver.
Things. But we penalize the saver. We penalize long-term forward thinking on retirement planning and those kinds of things. So a lot of people are looking at this and saying, how are we going to bring interest rates back to reality so that our economy is a more balanced economy and not just this race to the bottom on interest rates? So I could see, and we talked about this a little bit, but I can see a balanced approach where you see interest rates start to go up on especially long-term mortgages and that kind of borrowing, so that we then bring this into equilibrium. Everybody's talking about these, the massive gains that we will be gained, because Americans will have more money in their pocket. I think that will be offset slightly by the interest rates that I believe, personally, I don't know how you continue to run a treasury with the notes so low right now.
Let's bring this to Utah a little bit. You guys both had interim this month already. What are they talking about on Utah's Capitol Hill about tax reform and what it will mean to our state? My understanding is that we'll get a $200 million windfall.
Yeah, that's a big number, right?
Because and just to our listeners, it's because the way they're defining taxable income makes it larger, and so when we apply our rate.
Well, and it makes the AGI, which is the adjusted gross income, which is the number you bring from your federal return to your state return. If the federal return no longer gives you a credit for your state and local taxes, that you just the AGI just doesn't include that number. Mm-hmm. It doesn't subtract
that
number.
All of a sudden, you got a larger base to put the rate
against. You got a larger base to put the money against.
So,
Windfall to the state. But have you noticed the states that are complaining about it the most? It's the blue states with inordinately high local and state taxes. They're all complaining. And the number one reason they're complaining is because their taxes are already high. And so they're not cutting money out of their, the federal mm-hmm. money that they're sending.
Yeah.
So.
Jim, what did you see up on Capitol Hill about federal tax reform?
We were in the same committee.
We're in the same, but of course we see two different worlds sitting in the same committee. Look,
I hear music and I'm waltzing through a meadow, and Jim is dodging,
He's
hellfire.
Welcome to Hades.
Waving my hands on the other side. And,
abandon hope, all you who enter here.
Look, we just couldn't be writing a tax policy. And I'm on this tax review commission, which has been meeting for a couple of years, and on rev and tax. They're going down this buy-in that corporations are great, and if we just give enough money to enough corporations and lower their taxes enough, they're going to go out and everything is going to be great. Just look back at the facts. The trickle-down didn't work with Reagan. It led to the biggest deficits in history. It doesn't work. I don't know what more we need to say. One thing we know that is going to work is when we cut those lower and middle class benefits, like an education, the rippling effect will be there forever and ever. I'm just sick and tired of those who have so much gold making all the rules and sticking it to the working people of the state and smiling and saying, that's all for your own good. Give me a break.
Gentlemen, it is Thanksgiving week, which is a fun time because we can put on our political hats and talk about the political turkeys of the year.
Mm.
And I'm interested to hear your thoughts. Dan, who's your political turkey of the year?
Gosh, I've been debating for, since you brought this up. I started thinking, is it Sean Reyes for blowing the FTC thing? Is it count my vote for breaking their deal with the legislature?
Ooh.
Is it Governor Herbert for inventing an election process? Or Congressman Chaffetz for leaving office early? This is a tough year for
me to choose.
What about a Democrat?
You've got a good Thanksgiving buffet you put out there.
Yeah, I've got the potatoes. I've got the yams. Everybody's eating at my table, so I'm kind of at a loss, really, for who
Those
gets to be the main feature here.
Jim, who's your political turkey or turkeys?
Can I say the entire Utah D.C. delegation?
Wow. Wow.
They know what an incompetent, despicable moron is in the White House, and yet they've made this Faustian bargain with the devil and with Mussolini, and they refuse. They simply refuse to tell the truth because they think they're going to get a Supreme Court nominee or some public lands. You are turkeys of the year because you have no moral backbone. Chris Stewart, Mia Love, Warren Hatch, Mike Lee, Rob Bishop, and maybe the new guy, I don't know. We'll give him a week or two to decide. Stand up for what's right, and you're not doing it. Shame on you.
Well said, Jim, and I love that Mussolini made an entry into our program.
Fortunately, he was able to come back from the dead to bring that in.
My political turkey, hands down, and Jim referenced it, but is Donald Trump. How can you not have him as our political turkey of the year? And I was thinking about this. I was thinking, you know, I'm okay with draining the swamp. I'm okay with change in Washington. It's just you can have somebody with integrity do it. And this man does not even come close to my bar of, you know, high conduct. So he's my political turkey. Let's do another one.
I'm going to stand up for the Donald a little bit. He's getting a lot of Republican good stuff done.
Yeah, he will not get there in my camp. Okay. Dan, Jim, you're at the Thanksgiving table and you've got the wishbone and you're pulling it with one of your political buddies and you get to make a political wish. Jim, what would be your political wish in a Thanksgiving wishbone sense?
My wish would be that the people of Utah somehow would get organized to the point where what they want would line up with the people they elect, because you can pick the four or five most important issues: more money for education, cleaner air, accepting Medicaid, protecting our public lands. There is a strong majority that want that, and you have a legislature that completely acts in the opposite direction. How long can a democracy act like that? I mean, it's... My wishbone is that the people of Utah would elect people that reflect back their values rather than ideologues that are in so many of those legislative and statewide elected positions.
Very good.
Well,
Dan,
we know it can at least last 241 years, so we'll see if that democracy can go further.
Your political wish here.
My wishbone, you know, I have long dreamed about the day when we could get less partisan. You know, where there can be open policy conversations and we can be focused on policy moving forward. Not necessarily about who's right and who's wrong, but about how we move the country forward and how we move the state forward. I want to have more of those conversations and less about who's right, who's wrong, Republican versus Democrat. So my wishbone is that, right?
Very good. So my political wishbone is very specific. You guys were more philosophical. I love this $200 million windfall that we may get from tax reform. I think tax reform will pass. I think we'll get a windfall here in Utah. I love the idea of an Our Schools Now compromise, where we take that $200 million that was just a gift to us and find $300 million more of revenue to put into our public education system, giving us $500 million compared to a $700 million initiative that I don't think is going to pass. I think there's a deal there, and I'd love to see our legislature do it.
You know, I'm not sure the legislature won't give back that $200 million.
That's true.
You know, they're just going to say, no, we're not taking it. It's not ours. It's not going to happen, because that's a tax increase any way you put it.
I have a bill to cut taxes for that reason, so it's going to
be.
Okay,
this could be interesting. Let's do quick gripes, Dan. Got a mini gripe for us.
I didn't realize we're going to gripe anymore.
You don't
I'll go gripe really quick.
Okay. I have to gripe because I have one, and it involves one of you. So.
In a huge bill of horribles, the worst part of the tax bill that our Utah representatives voted for was charging grad students full tax, full income tax rates for the money that they receive in tuition waivers. I mean, you will put 90% of our grad students – out of business because I'm going to have to, they owe the taxes that year on this $30,000, $35,000, or $40,000 in tuition waivers. Who would even think of that? You voted for it, Mia. Yeah. Shame on you.
Dan, do you want to gripe or you want to yield your time?
Why don't you, I'll yield my time,
okay.
Natalie. I was trying to come up with something to gripe
every
about.
Every other year, the Utah legislature has a policy summit where they go off-site for a full day and just think about Utah's future. The Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute, we helped co-host that. Dan, you were there. My gripe is that Senator Jim DeBacchus stood us up and denied himself the opportunity to think about Utah's long-term future. You need to come visit me at the mansion so I can give you a quick summary.
Okay, I'll do that. I will be there.
Very good. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle with Dan McKay, Jim DeBacchus, and Natalie Gochner. Our program is produced by Emily Means. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.